Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the podcast. This season, we are going to be focusing on colonial America and how the world powers jockeyed for position in the Americas. We will look at the push and pull factors that drove immigrants to the Americas and the impact all of this had on the native people groups. On today's episode, we are going to take a look at an event that took place around modern-day Santa Fe, New Mexico, known historically as the Pueblo Revolt of 1680. This bloody event marked the only successful native uprising against a colonial power in North America. But first, let's take a look at the history of Spanish colonization in New Mexico. The year is 1519, and Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes arrives in Mexico at Veracruz with about 600 men and, with the help of translators, works his way through Mexico, learning of the native hatred of the Aztec Empire who currently ruled over them. While Cortes knew nothing of the Aztecs before his arrival in the Americas, when he finally arrived at the Aztec Empire of Tenochtitlan, he had formed an alliance with around 20,000 native peoples along the way. Tenochtitlan was a beautiful city with around 300,000 inhabitants, which is crazy to even think because this would make it one of the largest cities in the world at the time. It sat in the middle of a lake with hanging gardens, an aqueduct, and had incredible pyramids that were several stories high. So if you can imagine how beautiful this landscape is, you can imagine how excited Cortes was when he arrived. The emperor of the Aztecs was a man by the name of King Moctezuma. And when he was made aware of the Spaniards' arrival, he was intrigued because of all the interesting things that they had brought with them. The Spanish brought horses and war dogs and cannons which the Aztecs had never even seen before. Because of this, Moctezuma gave the Spaniards gifts, hoping that they could form an economic alliance built on trade. However, this would not be the case. The relationship quickly disintegrated, and the Spanish, with the help of their Native American alliances, and along with deadly disease, like smallpox and the common cold even, Tenochtitlan will fall into the hands of the Spanish by 1521. The once beautiful city was now in complete ruins. Moctezuma died, and the Spanish began to rebuild on top of the ruins. Tenochtitlan is where we would consider modern-day Mexico City. The Spanish would then set up the encomienda system in their territory, which is essentially feudalism and slavery combined. The encomienda system is a labor system in which encomenderos would force native peoples to mine gold, harvest crops, and produce other materials for the Spanish, and in exchange, the native peoples would get converted to Catholicism and would get to have the protection of the encomenderos. When you combine the harsh treatment and the deadly diseases brought on by the Spaniards, the native population will go from 20 million down to 2 million by 1600. The Spanish also set up the caste system in their new imperialized territory, giving full legal rights to the full-blooded Spaniards, also known as Creoles, with those who had mixed Spanish blood and native blood in the middle class, also known as mestizos. And then the lowest caste in the system was given to those who had mixed blood of European and African blood or African and native blood. They were called mulattoes. This system was set up in a manner to where there was no upward mobility in society, and it was solely built on a person's race and ethnicity. After the Spanish had established their dominance, they went north into the area around modern-day Santa Fe, New Mexico, where they will continue to look for that much sought-after city of gold. When they arrive, they see several different native groups living together, each of them having their own unique traits and traditions and cultures. But the Spanish categorize them into one group, which is very common with imperialists. They have to, in their minds, categorize people into subgroups that are easy to keep in line. And so they call all of the native peoples from these various tribes the Pueblos. Upon arrival, the Spaniards will immediately work to bring the inhabitants under their control. They will build missions to help spread Catholicism in the region while also providing protection against possible resistance. One of the more famous missions that many Texans might remember is the one in San Antonio, the Alamo. They also immediately began to burn down the religious symbols of the Pueblo peoples, burning down their religious centers, and also burning important religious symbols like the Kachina masks. At one point, the Franciscan Catholic priest will go around and in one fell swoop burn over 1,000 Kachina masks. This should give you a visual of the hostility that existed in New Mexico territory once the Spanish arrive. Additionally, the Pueblos kept reserves of their corn because they understood that weather is unpredictable, and you never know when you're going to need to dip into the extra grain because of drought. Corn is a commodity in this region, and the Spaniards, who also need food, are going to use their power to impose severe taxation on the Pueblos, demanding their corn, and over time, the supply of corn that had been stored away by the Pueblos would gradually come under the control of the Spaniards. And then in the 1670s, there's going to be a major drought. Go figure. And the corn levels drop considerably. And the Pueblo peoples, out of desperation, became even more dependent upon the Spanish, because they needed their corn that they once had control over. You see, forced Catholicism combined with drought and famine is going to lead to a heightened state of violence in the region. The governor of the region was a man named Juan Francisco Trevino, and he began to use his influence and the Catholic Church as a weapon. He went around and rounded up all the Pueblo religious leaders in the area and brought them together and labeled them as sorcerers. He took them into the middle of town and whipped them, tortured them. Some guys had their feet cut off. Even three were hanged. Many of them were locked up and tortured until they converted to Catholicism, while some were beaten severely and then released. One of those who was beaten and then released was a man by the name of Pope. When Pope is released, he's going to head north to the upper Rio Grande Valley, where the Taos Pueblo live. And the Taos Pueblo, to this point, had been just out of the reach of Spanish control, but they had heard about the experience of their neighbors. And so imagine as the Taos Pueblo see this man who is bruised and beaten with lacerations coming to them with a story of what took place in his homeland. Pope is going to get the Taos Pueblo and the surrounding areas on board with a revolt. It should be noted before we get into Popey's rebellion in 1680 that there were several what we will call in this podcast pre-revolt revolts. These were formed and executed by local Pueblo people groups, but none of them will end successfully like Popey's. In fact, when Juan de Onate invaded New Mexico territory at the end of the 16th century, there will almost immediately be a series of revolts, all of which will end in the natives being defeated. For example, in 1598, the Spanish went into Acoma Pueblo demanding food, and when the Acoma Pueblo decided to refuse that demand, fighting ensued, and the Pueblo there in Acoma killed Spanish soldiers. The Spanish will come back and in a torturous manner will kill hundreds of the Acoma Pueblo in retaliation. In 1621, it's recorded that the Picaris Pueblo had been beating the local friars and priests there at the missions, the Catholic missions, with sticks. And so the Spanish come in and respond to that incident with violence. In 1623, the Jemez Pueblo will burn down the Catholic missions, and also the Zuni in 1632 will kill a Franciscan priest at the local mission. In Awatawi in 1633, we have records that show a priest was killed by local Pueblo there. And in 1639, there were three priests killed in Taos. From 1644 to 47, the Jemez Pueblo planned a revolt against the Spanish, but someone leaked the information. And so the Spanish rounded up 29 of their leaders and hanged them all. In the early 1650s, we see a group of Tiwas who plan a revolt that was spoiled by leaked information again, and 9 of their leaders were hanged. When we get to the 1660s, we have the Salinas Pueblo. And here we actually have an attempt, at least, to unite all of the Pueblo peoples to go on a massive revolt against the Spanish. Unfortunately, on the day of the revolt, it is only the Salinas Pueblo people groups that show up. And when you only have the Salinas Pueblo showing up, this is going to result in a massive defeat at the hands of the Spanish. And the point of bringing this up is, I don't want you to walk away thinking that Popey was the first to do this. There is a long history thus far, since invasion in 1598, of the Pueblo peoples resisting Spanish control. But none of these revolts to this point have had much success. Yes, you've killed some priests and some friars. Yes, you've maybe burned down some missions, but you haven't had any success in driving the Spanish out. So if this is going to work, Popey is going to have to rally large numbers of people in the Pueblo community, and they're going to have to figure out a way to drive the Spanish out. While at Taos, Popey put himself in a kiva, which is a religious chamber that is at least partially or completely underground, and he began to meditate on what to do next. He believed that based on that time in the kiva that he was to destroy the Spaniards, removing them from his homeland by any means necessary. You see, one of Popey's strongest characteristics as a leader was his charisma. He had an innate ability to communicate with the Pueblo. And over the next several years after his arrival in Taos, or at Taos in 1675, he will build support for the movement in the area. But in order for the revolt to work, he would have to ensure that these attacks were coordinated. And the question is, how do you do that when your occupiers, the Spaniards, are all throughout the region? Popey had an idea. He sent out runners and gave them these long cords with knots in them. And every morning, when they woke up, they were to untie the knot. By the time that you got to the end of the cord and the last knot was untied, that was the day the attack would commence. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's a pretty genius idea, and it's really hard for us in the modern world, especially in the Western world, to understand how incredibly ingenious that is. Unfortunately, though, for Popey, one of the runners is captured by a Spaniard soldier, and through torture, they discover the plan, so they commence the attack on the next day. And there is quite a bit of scholarly debate as to the exact date the revolt commenced, because you had some who stuck to the plan of invasion after the last knot was tied, and some who decided to go early because they heard the plan was spoiled. And then you still had others who decided, well, we'll wait a day after the original date and we'll go after that. But in any event, historians widely believe that on August 9th, 1680, the Pueblos will go on this invasion, this rebellion in modern-day Santa Fe and the surrounding areas, and they will kill a lot of Franciscan priests, Spanish men, women, and children, along with soldiers, and they will burn down many of the Spanish churches and missions. This rebellion is going to force the Spanish to uproot and leave the area for the next 12 years, and the Pueblo people will have control of their land again. You have to understand how incredible this feat is. As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this is the only successful native uprising in North America. Here we have a group of Pueblos attacking and running out soldiers, encomenderos, and religious leaders of arguably the strongest military in the world at the time. And I wish that I could tell you that this was the end of the story, that the Pueblo people maintained their sovereignty for generations to come. However, in 1692, the Spanish will come back and reconquer the land, exerting their will on the Pueblo people. So I think that to kind of bring this episode to a close, I think we have to answer an important question that still remains out there for us. And this is what we have to do as historians, is we have to ask these kinds of questions, and there isn't a resolute answer. Was this rebellion actually a success? Because 12 years later, they come back. By 1700, it is estimated that due to disease and violence, 90% of the Pueblo population was decimated. This is a great case study on how successful revolts are more than just removing the unwanted power in your region. Now, that's just step one. Step two is about establishing unity once the vacuum effect occurs, which the Pueblo failed to do. It's quite amazing that a century later, we will see a similar revolt where colonists on the East Coast of North America will remove the English powers that be. And they will unify to a certain degree, allowing their country to survive and be sovereign. In the Pueblo case, you had some who did not participate in the rebellion, likely because they were afraid of what would happen if it failed. And this is naturally going to cause a rift between them and those who did participate. You also had other religious leaders within the community who did not want Popey to lead them as this religious figure for the whole. However, it is very important. It's very important that we note that Once the Franciscan priests do return in 1692, we see a different tone with these priests and friars. They're not as violent. They're not as demonstrative and forceful with their conversion attempts to Catholicism. We see these priests a little bit more open to a pluralistic religious society. So in some ways, we do see the revolt have long-term success for the Pueblo, even though the Spanish come back 12 years later. But regardless of how one feels about the success of the rebellion, it is without question important to understand Pope's impact. He has made an impact, certainly in his time, but also in modern day, throughout the southwest portion of the United States, especially in New Mexico. Today, in fact, if you go to the U.S. Capitol building and tour the rotunda, which I've actually had the honor to do, you'll notice that each state in the Union has two statues of their own choosing. These statues are to represent what their state is about. These statues are supposed to represent who their people are. And one of the statues that New Mexico has is a statue of Pope. And in his right hand are the knotted cords used to signify the start of the Pueblo Revolt of 1680. Imperialism takes on many forms and inevitably leaves certain people groups destitute, enslaved, captive, stripped of its heritage, or dead. And through the centuries, we have seen the advantages and rewards of being a nation who expands its influence by imperialism. However, these events in history are often told by those who are in power. And while the Pueblo Revolt is actually an exception to that rule, it's important that we genuinely seek to find out who the voiceless people are in any given generation. And through diligent research, seek to hear what they have to say so that we have a complete view of history. In other words, we should be a people that always seeks to give a voice to the voiceless. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to the History Podcast. We would like your feedback, good or bad, so that we can better serve our audience. If you have a question you would like for us to answer in a future podcast or have a topic request, leave that as well. If you haven't already subscribed to the History Podcast, go ahead and do that now so that you'll get notified when new episodes come out. You can find the History Podcast on any of your podcast streaming platforms. The History Podcast is an Anchor FM production.